Good morning, one and all. I call to order the informal interactive hearing of the General Assembly on the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. I would like to warmly welcome to this hearing all representatives, especially those representing non-governmental and civil society organizations and the private sector. Members will recall that by its resolution 68/271 of 13 May 2014, the General Assembly decided to convene a high-level meeting on the 10th and 11th of July this year under the overall theme, Taking Stock of Progress in Implementing the Political Declaration of the High-Level Meeting of the General Assembly on the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases and scaling up multi-stakeholder and national multi-sectoral responses to the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases, including in the context of the post-2015 development agenda. The General Assembly also requested the President of the General Assembly, I think that's me, to organize no later than June of this year an informal interactive hearing with non-governmental organizations, civil society organizations, the private sector, and academia to provide input to the comprehensive review and assessment. Today's meeting responds to that request. Permit me to make a brief statement. Excellencies, Dr. Chestnut, Ambassador Kerr, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I am pleased to welcome you to this informal interactive hearing on the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases, NCDs. Today, provide us with an opportunity to discuss a phenomenon that surely affects everyone in this room. We all know someone who is afflicted by a non-communicable disease. Homes and communities across every region of the world know this burden, whether it is in the form of cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, or chronic respiratory disease. An African proverb says, it takes a village to raise a child. But the same can be said regarding our approach to the health challenges confronting us. It takes a village to prevent and control non-communicable disease. Thus, broader community-based engagement is key, and I thank you for your participation today. Today's hearing and its overarching theme, Global Progress, National Action, Moving from Commitment to Implementation, serves an important purpose. Foremost, it provides non-governmental organizations, civil society, the private sector, and academia with the opportunity to share experiences and perspectives in the prevention and control of NCDs. At the same time, it is also a forum to make specific recommendations for the consideration of member states. At the comprehensive review and assessment to be held next month. As NCDs are one of the major challenges for development in the 21st century, both of these meetings also offer a timely forum to promote the consideration of this important issue in the post-2015 development agenda. Excellencies, we are now 3 years after the adoption in 2011 of the landmark political declaration of the high-level meeting of our General Assembly on the prevention and control of NCDs. Through the World Health Organization's Global Action Plan and Comprehensive Global Monitoring Framework, the international community has a clear roadmap to combat the threat of NCDs. The implementation of this roadmap at all levels must be a priority and augmented by the ongoing work and collaborative efforts of non-governmental organizations and civil society, as well as by the commitment of the private sector. Your continued efforts to raise awareness about NCDs and to strengthen action at the global, regional, and national levels have resulted in tremendous progress. We see the fruits of your labor in the relabeling of food products, the reduction in salt content in food products, and in more responsible marketing of foods and non-alcoholic beverages to children. The probability of dying from any of the major NCDs between the ages of 30 and 70 years ranges from 10% in developed countries to 60% in developing countries. This stark contrast not only suggests the depth and disparity of the problem, but it is also a reminder that global solutions will require the support of all relevant stakeholders. No one entity working in silo, be it public or private entity, can tackle the global burden and challenges of NCDs alone. As civil society, you are well placed to mobilize the necessary political will, public awareness, and support in the fight against NCDs. However, you also have an important role in ensuring promises are kept. For NCDs, reaching commitments and observing global goals, targets, and indicators is facilitated by organizations such as WHO, with assistance from local NGOs. Together, this assessment of progress can bring the appropriate pressure to bear on governments in order to accelerate prevention and treatment of NCDs. The watchdog role is not only directed towards governments. Civil society must monitor the interactions among their own organizations and the relationship between government and the private sector to ensure that there are no conflicts of interest and to agitate when private sector actors are opposed to the prevention and control of NCDs. The multiple interests in any society that bear on NCDs create the need to insist on transparency and accountability. But this does not mean that there is not a place for the private sector in the NCD response. In fact, there must be engagement by all sectors. Ladies and gentlemen, throughout this 68th session of our General Assembly, I have stressed the importance of an inclusive and transformative post-2015 development agenda. One way to bring about this transformation is through the active and constructive engagement of civil society. As I stated at the interactive briefing I convened with civil society this past February, you and your organizations are the trusted partners of the United Nations and are important contributors to the multilateral system. Along with the three high-level events and the three thematic debates that I convened over the last 6 months, as well as several other processes mandated by various General Assembly resolutions, this interactive hearing provides an additional example of how we as an international community can move our commitment for an inclusive, transformative, and dynamic post-2015 agenda from principle to reality, with global health as a priority. As outlined in the concept note, today's interactive hearing seeks to answer several important questions which relate to contributions of civil society to date, items to be considered for the inclusion in the outcome document to be adopted in July 2014, best practices and lessons learned, how to expand, improve the capacity of civil society, and ways to prioritize NCDs in global and national development agendas, including the post-2015 development agenda. I have no doubt that you will provide very thoughtful and informative answers to these questions, and that our interactive hearing will make important contributions to the high-level review and assessment. I thank you. I now give the floor to Dr. Oleg Chesnov, Assistant Director General for Non-Communicable Diseases and Mental Health at the World Health Organization. Assistant Secretary General.
Thank you, Excellencies, Ambassador, ladies and gentlemen. It's not necessary to remind you or repeat that over 40 million people die each year from NCD between age of 30 and 70. And most of them, they're from developing countries. Nevertheless, we in WHO see that this number is still not so obviously decreasing. We in WHO estimate that more than half of the premature death from NCD are linked to risk factors, namely tobacco use, unhealthy diet and physical inactivity, and the harmful use of alcohol. The remaining are linked to weak health system that do not respond effectively. Cardiovascular diseases, cancer, chronic respiratory diseases, and diabetes still remain to be a main killer. And not only in this group of people between 30 and 70. 3 years ago, here in New York, we became in conclusion that most of the premature death from the NCD can be prevented by governments taking a leader role and responsibility. In September 2011, head of state and government adopted the political declaration on NCD and committed themselves to develop national plan to prevent and control NCD. At the same time, WHO was requested to help to do this. 3 years later, positive news is that we have now a global agenda in place. First, we identify 9 concrete global targets for 2025. And also, second, we have established a comprehensive monitoring framework, which is based on the 25 indicator. Third, we organize around the WHO Global NCD Action Plan 2013-2020. Four, we have now UN Interagency Task Force on NCD, which can help us to mobilize our UN family to fight against of the NCD. Fifth, we have now WHO Global Coordination Mechanism on NCD. All of this is done in a short period of time. Country also have started to make a progress. The number of countries with an operational policy and plan to address NCD with a dedicated budget have increased from the 32% in 2010 to 50% in 2013. However, it is only beginning or confirmation that we are on the right way and we have support from all of you. Developing countries have a difficulty, it's obvious. They have a difficulty to move all this process to the action, because they don't have enough capacity, they don't have a technical expertise or resources. The role of civil society and the private sector in the contributing to the national effort to address NCD need to clarify it too. To take a stock of the progress made since 2011 and identify remaining gap, the United Nations will hold a comprehensive review on 10 and 11 July 2014 in New York. The high-level meeting on NCD in July 2014 should be seen as a major turning point in moving from commitment to the action. Countries are expecting to adopt an action-oriented outcome document that will shape the national and international agenda will enter the post-2015 period. Today you have an opportunity to provide an input in the preparation process leading to the second high-level meeting in NCD. Today you have an opportunity to make your voice heard. I wish you a fruitful discussion today. Thank you.
I thank Assistant Secretary General Chesnut for his statement. I now give the floor to Ambassador Sally Carroll, Senior Vice President for Global Health at the American Cancer Society, she is our featured speaker. Ambassador.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency John Ash, President of the General Assembly, Dr. Oleg Chesnut from Assistant Secretary General of the World Health Organization, distinguished guests and ladies and gentlemen. I think it's really appropriate that this session of the General Assembly, the civil society part of it, should be presided over by a man from the Caribbean, since it was people from the Caribbean who many years ago began to alert the world to the coming tsunami of non-communicable diseases. So it's an honor and a pleasure for me to be here this morning, and especially so since I was first a delegate to the United Nations back in the 1980s as a member of the U.S. mission to the United Nations, and later served as the first deputy director of the Joint United Nations Program on HIV and AIDS in the 1990s. So given my experience at the United Nations, seen from both inside and outside of the organization, I know it was truly a historic event when in 2011 the United Nations high-level meeting on NCDs was convened. Only for the second time in United Nations history when health was considered as part of the broader issue of social and developmental issues. The 2011 meeting led to a political declaration to fight NCDs at all levels and in all countries. The NCD Alliance and other civil society organizations have made sure that this topic has stayed on the radar screen and has made some important gains in the last few years. It's actually coming along, I think, quite quickly. But we are here today to consider and to assess the progress which is being made in addressing the issues of NCDs, and to provide a civil society perspective to inform the meeting of member states, which will be convened here next month. NCDs are a vital topic of enormous significance. Non-communicable diseases are increasing in all of the world's continents. What 10 years ago was thought of as a rich man's disease are now affecting people in all countries and of all socioeconomic levels. In part, this is an outcome of the good job that national governments, civil society, WHO, the private sector, and other UN agencies have done to save lives and prevent premature mortality from communicable diseases such as HIV, AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, and the gains in maternal and child health, including family planning. But now we are confronted with an existential reality. The gains we have achieved over the past decade could be wiped out, and the investments we have made in successfully addressing HIV and AIDS and other communicable diseases could be lost to a tsunami of mortality and morbidity from cancer, cardiovascular diseases, diabetes, and respiratory diseases. Nelson Mandela's granddaughter, Zoleka, a breast cancer survivor herself, was to have been here today, but a last-minute change in her plans gives me the opportunity to speak with you in her place. I was at Davos when Nelson Mandela addressed the World Economic Forum in 1999 and told the world leaders assembled there that if they didn't do something about AIDS in Africa, they could forget about development in Africa. Well, the world did do something about AIDS. The response from national governments, the private sector, civil society organizations, and international development agencies and the United Nations was massive. And today there is a reduction in new HIV infections. A significant portion of those affected are on treatment. Mortality rates have dropped. AIDS has become a chronic disease which can be treated. And there has been a significant increase in the GDP of most sub-Saharan African countries. This is a clear and pertinent lesson. The question before this body today, therefore, is whether we have the political will and the resources to address the challenge of NCDs. The Harvard World Economic Forum study done at the time of the high-level meeting in 2011 predicted that if left unchecked, non-communicable diseases would cost the world economy $47 trillion in lost economic output in just the next two decades. Thinking about that in another way, $47 trillion, if we didn't lose that, it's enough money to eradicate $2-a-day poverty among the 2.5 billion of our fellow citizens who are living in that state for more than half a century. The high-level meeting in 2011 was a major step forward. It gave us a political declaration that essentially says four things. First of all, that NCDs are the number one cause of disease and death. Second, that there are some best buys that we know how to scale up now to reduce the burden of disease. Third, that the burden is economic as well as in human life and human dignity lost. And fourth, that we will not be successful unless we have an all-of-government approach and we engage the private sector and civil society organizations. As a veteran of the fight on HIV and AIDS, I believe there are many lessons in that fight which are applicable to what we're facing today. One of those lessons is that I think we must both prevent and treat NCDs. We will not treat our way out of this epidemic. That's proving impossible, even in rich countries, and is certainly out of reach for low and middle income countries. We must employ what we know about prevention, and we must do it now and scale it up rapidly. Tobacco is a major issue in developing nations, and we can save so many lives just by encouraging people to avoid it. Tobacco is poised to kill 1 billion in this century if left unchecked. The vast majority of those people living in low and middle income countries where 80% of smokers live. Tobacco is the most preventable cause of death. And it's the only risk factor truly common to all four of the main types of chronic disease, causing 1 in 6 deaths from NCDs. Africa, in particular, is slated to become a future epicenter of the tobacco epidemic, according to a recent report by the American Cancer Society. Based on this analysis, we know the number of Africans who smoke would increase to a staggering 572 million by 2100, from 77 million today, unless we act now. Today, Africa has lower tobacco use rates than any other region in the world. Imagine if that doubles or triples or quadruples over the next decades in a continent that is already struggling to handle the growing burden of chronic disease. So if we do nothing else but stem the rising tide of tobacco use in low and middle income countries, we will have done everything. We know that increased taxes and regulation on marketing and enforcing the FCTC are all important steps that we must take now. Secondly, it's becoming increasingly obvious that healthy diet and exercise are key to controlling NCDs. That is something we must increase awareness of and promote: physical activity and healthy eating. Third, at least in speaking of cancer, there are two incredibly low-cost effective fixes: vaccination for hepatitis B to prevent liver cancer, and for HPV to prevent cervical cancer. Imagine if we had an AIDS vaccine. We would be shouting from the rooftops and making sure that everybody got vaccinated immediately. And yet we have these tools for hepatitis B and HPV at our disposal, and yet woefully low rates of implementation all over the world, including in my country, the United States, where only 30% of eligible girls have been vaccinated. So for all that prevention is the key and must not be neglected, we must also make sure people have access to the treatment they need. While we won't treat our way out of this epidemic, we won't prevent our way out of it either. It's not impossible to imagine that we can provide better access to treatment using approaches that we have learned in strengthening health systems through the HIV/AIDS epidemic. Because if there is no treatment possible, who would ever want to be screened? And in that lies the key to solving this epidemic. Treatment also means providing palliative care to diminish suffering, to offer pain relief, and to increase the quality of life for those living with non-communicable diseases. WHO considers opioids essential for pain treatment, and they are on the essential medicines list of every developing country. And yet, 85% of the world's population living in low and middle income countries consumes just 7% of these medications. The recent World Health Assembly resolution on palliative care is a step in the right direction, but it needs to be resourced. Because the only thing worse than dying from HIV or cancer or heart disease or diabetes or lung disease is dying in pain and without dignity. And that is often the case, when $3 per patient per week could make all the difference in the quality of life. Finally, I believe civil society organizations like the NCD Alliance and its members can and do play a vital role in advocacy. We at the American Cancer Society often say the cancer fight is as much an issue of public policy as it is a medical and scientific challenge. This is true on a national, regional, and even global scale, and I believe is true not only for cancer, but for all chronic diseases, because advocacy is itself a force multiplier. And we need to be advocating for more resources. There are $24 billion now in development assistance on health, $24 billion, but only $270 million of those dollars are dedicated to NCDs, which are causing the greatest burden of disease. We are talking about the biggest health challenges of our day, perhaps even of this century. And money alone will not solve the problem. But without money, it's impossible to imagine real progress. The good news is we know how to save more lives right now. We can create a world with less chronic diseases. We strongly and simply have to come together to implement proven strategies and to find new ways to break down the barriers that hinder our progress. NCDs are truly universal, but the experience of them is far from being so. Whether you live should not determine if you live. This is a matter of equity and of human rights. Everyone deserves access to quality health care and prevention and treatment that could save their lives. Together, I know we can make sure that they get it. Thank you.
I thank Ambassador Carroll for her statement. As members have been informed, this informal interactive civil society hearing also consists of two roundtables and a closing segment, all of which will take place in this chamber. Roundtable one, entitled Enhancing International Cooperation for NCDs, Mobilizing Domestic, Bilateral, Regional, and Multilateral Resources, and Building Capacities for Sustainable Human Development, will be chaired by the Permanent Representative of Jamaica to the United Nations, Ambassador Rattray, and will be held immediately after this opening segment. Roundtable two, entitled Mobilizing Whole of Society Efforts for NCD Prevention and Control at National and Regional Levels, Gaps, Solutions, Innovations, and Collaborative Multisectoral Partnerships, and Fostering Private Sector and Non-Health Sector Engagement, will be chaired by the Permanent Representative of Belgium to the United Nations, Ambassador Frankenay, and will begin this afternoon at 3 p.m. again in this chamber. The closing segment will begin immediately thereafter at approximately 5:30 p.m. Representatives and invited guests are encouraged to use the opportunity during the roundtables to pose questions and respond in an interactive manner to the comments and presentations made by panelists and other experts. I now invite Ambassador Rattray and the panelists of Roundtable 1 to take their seats at this podium. The opening segment is now concluded.
Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant General. Welcome to New York.
Yes, thank you. Chin, you met here.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Courtney Rattray of the Jamaican Permanent Mission to the United Nations. We will now begin the first roundtable, which is, as you have heard, entitled Enhancing International Cooperation for NCDs, Mobilizing Domestic, Bilateral, Regional, and Multilateral Resources, and Building Capacities for Sustainable Human Development. I have with me on the podium Professor Gerald Younger, who you'll be hearing from later on. He's from the Aga Khan University in Kenya. And to the far right, Professor Giorgio Calabrese of Federico II University in Naples. Mr. Ziad is on my left of the secretariat, and to the extreme left of me, we're pleased to have Katie Danes, who is the executive director of NCD Alliance. The purpose of this roundtable is to seek the views of NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector on their role and responsibilities in, firstly, supporting national efforts to address NCDs, recognizing the primary role and responsibility of governments in responding to the challenge of NCDs, and secondly, enhancing international cooperation for NCDs. Allow me, if you will, to just set the context within which our discussions will be undertaken this morning. As you are aware, the 2011 UN Political Declaration on NCDs recognized the role of the international community and international cooperation in assisting member states, particularly developing countries, in complementing national efforts to generate an effective response to NCDs. It is also recognized that the rising prevalence, morbidity, and mortality of NCDs worldwide, which can be largely prevented and controlled by, among other things, raising the priority accorded to NCDs in development cooperation by enhancing such cooperation in this regard. In September of 2011, the heads of state and government and representatives of state and government committed to the following: strengthened international cooperation in support of national, regional, and global plans for the prevention and control of NCDs. Stress the importance of North-South, South-South, and triangular cooperation. Encourage the continued inclusion of NCDs in development cooperation agendas and initiatives. Explore the provision of adequate, predictable, and sustained resources through inter alia, bilateral, and multilateral channels, including traditional and voluntary funding mechanisms. World leaders also urged international organizations to continue to provide technical assistance and capacity building to developing countries. The note by the Secretary General transmitting the report of the WHO Director General on the prevention and control of NCDs highlighted progress as well as bottlenecks in the area of strengthening international cooperation of NCDs. One major bottleneck, according to the report, is that arrangements to meet country needs for technical assistance through bilateral and multilateral channels continue to be inadequate 3 years after the political declaration on NCDs was adopted. On the positive side, however, ECOSOC adopted Resolution 2013/12 in July of 2012, requesting the SG to establish the UN Interagency Task Force on the Prevention and Control of NCDs. The terms of reference of the task force were endorsed last week by ECOSOC. Moving forward, the question is, how scalable will the UN Task Force on NCDs become in meeting the demand for technical assistance related to NCDs in the post-2015 era? On another positive note, an estimated 9 members of the OECD, the OECD's Development Assistance Committee, have integrated NCDs in their bilateral and multilateral international development policies, compared to only one OECD/DAC member in 2010. However, the creditor reporting system on ODA of OECD-DAC does not include purpose code for NCDs, making it impossible to track ODA in support of national efforts to address NCDs. Moving forward, the question is, how will bilateral donors prepare themselves for meeting the demands from developing countries for technical assistance related to NCDs in the post-2015 era? A third positive note is that a small number of philanthropic foundations have started to support national efforts to implement the 2011 UN Political Declaration on NCDs. Moving forward, the question is, how can we engage more philanthropic foundations in this effort? A fourth positive note is that many NGOs, CBOs, and academia have rallied behind the 2011 UN Political Declaration on NCDs, as witnessed in this room today, I can see. However, the role and responsibilities of each of these actors in supporting national efforts to address NCDs is clear to all stakeholders involved. Also, the contributions that NGOs, CBOs, and academia have made to the prevention and control of NCDs has not been tracked due to the lack of a measurement tool. Moving forward, the question is, what are the roles and responsibilities of NGOs, CBOs, and academia, and what could be the ways and means of measuring their contributions to the implementation of the 2011 Political Declaration on NCDs? A fifth positive note is that the private sector has started to make some progress in selected markets in increasing their contribution to NCD prevention and control. However, food products consistent with a healthy diet are not affordable, accessible, and available in most developing countries, and no universal tool exists to measure the contribution of the private sector to the commitments made in the 2011 Political Declaration. Indeed, paragraph 44 of the Political Declaration, which calls on the private sector to take action, remains largely unimplemented. Moving forward, therefore, the question is, how can we mobilize the private sector in implementing paragraph 44 of the Political Declaration? We look forward this morning to hearing the views of participants on the following issues. What have been the respective contributions to date from NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector in supporting national efforts to implement the 2011 UN Political Declaration on NCDs and attain the 9 global targets for NCDs by 2025? Have these contributions been sufficient? What have been the ways and means of measuring and acknowledging the contributions to date from NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector in support of national efforts to address NCDs and towards attainment of the 9 global targets on NCDs? Have these ways and means been sufficient? How have NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector demonstrably committed to promoting public health? Have NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector been willing to participate in public reporting and accountability frameworks? And finally, which recommendations from NGOs, civil society organizations, academic institutions, and the private sector on how to enhance international cooperation for NCDs could be considered for inclusion in the outcome document to be adopted at the high-level meeting in July? As you know, this will take place on the 10th and the 11th of next month. I am confident that these questions will provide fodder for a fruitful discussion this morning. For these discussions, we will hear from our 3 panelists, and after each presentation, I'll open the floor to a first round of questions and responses from the panelists. Following all 3 presentations, I will once again, subject to the constraints of time, that is, open the floor for a final round of general comments and interventions. All participants of the roundtable are asked to stay on time and topic. When we have the final round of interventions, I'm going to ask you to identify yourselves. I'm going to restrict you to 3 minutes per intervention. I'm urging you, not that I'm not going to take written statements, but we're going to try and make this as interactive as possible. So I'm urging that we have a dynamic discourse here this morning. You will see the red light on your microphone start to blink in the event that you are trespassing on time. We're trying to end promptly today. Let me first of all introduce on my right Professor Gerald Younger. As I said, he's from the Aga Khan University in Kenya, where he's a professor of medicine and chair of the Department of Medicine. He's also founder member and the national chair of NCDs Alliance in Kenya and the co-chair of the East African NCD Alliance Initiative. He's an international member of the Scientific Committee of the American Heart Association, of the Scientific Committee, the American Heart Association, editorial board of the East African Medical Journal, and also a member of the Health Systems Global Initiative, World Heart Foundation, and a past president of Kenya's Cardiac Society, where he was president from 2007 until 2012. Professor Younger is a medical graduate of University of Nairobi. He is a fellow of the Royal College of Physicians of Edinburgh, the European Society of Cardiology, and the American College of Cardiology. He also holds a master's in healthcare management and policy and is a member of several health boards and advisory committees on health in Kenya. He has over 25 years' experience as an educator and researcher in NCDs, especially cardiovascular diseases, and has played an important leadership role nationally and globally in the promotion of NCD policies in health systems development for NCDs. It's my pleasure to now give the floor to Professor Gerald Younger. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. My name is Professor Younger. I'm the National Chair of NCD Alliance in Kenya. I wish to thank the President of the General Assembly for inviting me to speak in this very important civil society hearing on NCDs. I would like to share my experiences of tackling NCDs in Kenya and East Africa and Sub-Saharan Africa in general. Ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to be blunt this morning. The challenge of NCDs is immense. We are witnessing spiraling burden of NCDs, which now actually overshadows that one of our communicable diseases, even in sub-Saharan Africa. Our health systems are ill-equipped and overwhelmed. Our national economies are buckling under the pressure, and our people, often in prime time of their life, are paying for this inaction on NCDs with their lives. There can be no doubt, ladies and gentlemen, these diseases constitute health and development emergency of the 21st century. They are undermining sustainable human development in my region. They are threatening achievement of Millennium Development Goals and even the post-MDG era. But while there are many challenges, and there are also opportunities and examples of progress in this area. Today, I would like to share with you one example. This example highlights some important messages for today's proceedings. It's a case study that underscores the crucial role of civil society, the importance of cooperation within a region and twinning across regions, and above all, the imperative for action. Over the last few years, East Africa have seen the emergence of national NCD alliances, which we can proudly say all the countries have national alliances in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zanzibar, and these alliances are also currently being set up in Rwanda and Burundi. The alliances unite organizations for a common cause and are providing strong platforms for advocacy, awareness, and synergistic multi-sectoral mobilization of NCD action across the countries in the East African region and share similar policy and action and also status and challenges. What is particularly unique also is that some of these alliances have been set up by twinning with the Danish NCD Alliance with support of the Danida Civil Society Fund. This is the only example that I can remember of twinning between alliances from high-income countries and low-income countries, and it's also a unique example of bilateral development agency funding civil society efforts on NCDs. As an example of enhancing international cooperation for NCD, 1 year ago, we set out to work on a joint regional initiative, the East African NCD Alliance Initiative. This was done with technical support from the key global partners, namely the Danish NCD Alliance, the Global NCD Alliance, the Framework Convention Alliance, and three universities, Aarhus University in Denmark, Yale University, and USCLA of the USA. Ladies and gentlemen, the importance of North-South, South-South, and triangular cooperation is widely recognized in global health and development discourse, and indeed it's enshrined in the 2001 UN Declaration on NCDs. Our East African NCD Alliance initiative puts these words into practice for NCDs. It aims to promote closer technical cooperation between NCD alliances in East Africa through learning, training, sharing experiences, as well as strengthening civil society organizations' capacity for advocacy and collaborative networks regionally and globally. Together, we are now working on influencing national governments in East Africa to increase political priority and resources allocation for NCDs in the post-2015 development agenda. These countries are also in the process of socio-economic integration from the East African community and already have an East African Parliament and a Parliamentary Committee on Health. We conducted a benchmarking survey on NCD policy and action status in the East African countries, and this was presented last week between 13th and 15th of June in Entebbe, where an East African charter, NCD charter, was endorsed by all major stakeholders who attended the meeting. I would like to share with you three priorities from this East African NCD charter and urge member states to consider this in your negotiations on the UN review outcome document. Priority number one, prioritization of NCDs in national and global development plans and agendas. In Africa, we are in no doubt on the impact of NCDs on human development. We urge our governments in East Africa to prioritize NCDs in national development plans and instruments, and develop multi-sectoral and whole government approach to health, in particular NCDs, as critical and sustainable human development initiatives in the post-2015 development agenda. We also request donor governments and agencies to align aid and assistance with country and regional priorities and fulfill promises made in Paris and Accra declarations in aid effectiveness. Priority number two, strengthen civil society capacity building efforts, particularly in low and middle income countries. In 2011 NCD UN political declaration, promotion of importance of civil society in NCD response was emphasized. Yet, over the last 3 years, there has been insufficient attention to ensuring strong and thriving civil society in these countries. I therefore request the establishment of a civil society fund for NCDs specifically targeted at strengthening organizations and alliances, in low and middle income countries, to play their role effectively in awareness creation, advocacy, and multi-sectoral mobilization to action and holding their governments to account on commitments made. Priority number three, close the global resource gap on NCDs and walk the talk on North-South, South-South, and triangular cooperation. It is simply unacceptable that NCDs remain underfunded and under-prioritized by governments and the international community. The evidence speaks clearly on the current and projected impacts of NCDs on human development and the future. International trade activities, especially on tobacco control, alcohol, healthy foods, and access to essential medicines, and projected impact of NCDs on human development, and diagnostic needs need to be in line with 2011 UN political declaration on NCDs and attainment of the target goals. Our people, economies, and the planet in general will pay a very big price if we do not invest now. Investment in NCDs makes great sense for human development in both developing countries and high-income countries. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
I thank Professor Yongo. We have heard some very useful suggestions, I think, from him in terms of the approach that has been taken in the East African region. For example, the National NCDs Alliances that he spoke about, which he described as a strong platform for advocacy and awareness across East Africa, and also the work that they did in terms of establishing the East African Alliance Initiative. I note what you're saying, Professor, about the East African NCD Charter, urging other countries to adopt that model, and also the Civil Society Fund for NCDs to strengthen organizational alliances. I'm going to open the floor now for comments or questions, and in this regard, as I said, you're encouraged to limit your interventions to 3 minutes, so that all requests from the floor can be responded to. The floor is now open. You're recognized. Please go ahead, madam.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, excellences, can you hear me? Thank you very much. Thank you for being able to speak here. Allow me to follow up on the wonderful presentation just done by my colleague, Professor Younger. I am Susanne Folkvart, representing the Danish NCD Alliance, and I have some further comments just to tell you about the experiences we have had in this important North-South collaboration. We all agree that civil society can play a crucial role in combating NCDs, and in high-income countries, we see patient organizations with considerably power contributing to prevention and control and research. This is not the case in most developing countries. Here we will find that there's none or very weak NCD organizations with very, very few resources. With financial support from Danida's Civil Society Fund, the East African Partnerships have since 2010 managed to set up cancer, heart, and respiratory associations. Diabetes associations were already there. We have organized our patients' organizations in the NCD alliances in Uganda, Tanzania, and Zanzibar. The alliances and their member associations are very active in combating NCDs. First of all, we are working on being sustainable and legitimate through membership recruitment and good governance, creating legitimacy, transparency, and accountability. The NCD alliances are offering peer-based patient support and empowering. They run awareness campaigns in communities, and they are engaged in advocacy and lobbying and have already achieved broad recognition as the voice of the patients by their governments, parliaments, and population, and they have gained considerable influence. The latest development is an NCD network. We just heard about it among NCD associations in East Africa community countries. Together, in this framework, we have made a benchmark survey and the Global NCD Alliance's guidelines in order to take stock of the situation. And just hold multi-sectoral meeting, we have developed a charter as a response to the UN high-level meeting on NCDs, the post-2015 agenda, and not least our respective countries. All this have been possible by building on solidarity between North and South and by a progressive funding mechanism in Danida aimed at promoting a vibrant and broad civil society as part of development. We need commitment from well-organized patients, relatives, and people in the fight against NCDs, but they need help to develop. We therefore urge donors and the international society to help us by setting up a global NCD civil society fund. Please. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I see somebody raising their hand. Before I recognize you, sir, let me just let you know, for those of you who are not quite familiar with this PA system, there's a button in front of you. If you press it before you're recognized, the light will turn green. And as soon as I recognize you, it will switch to red, at which point you can make your intervention. Sir, you do have the floor now. Please go ahead.
Gracias, señor presidente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I speak in representation of the Convention Alliance, an organization which represents more than 350 organizations in more than 100 countries in the world. I speak on behalf of the Peruvian Alliance for Noncommunicable Diseases and the Permanent National Commission of Peru. Since December 2011, my country and other Latin American countries are pleased to see that the non-communicable diseases are coming to the forefront. And today we welcome the Assistant Director General of WHO and his statement, where he emphasized the costs and the challenges of the current situation, a situation which in my country and in other American countries is alarming. At present in my country, Peru, even in the poorer countries, poorer towns, deaths are 70% from these diseases, and there are costs which hurt the economy of our country. These health costs are mostly in the major cities. So as the report of the WHO states, we want to go from commitments to the implementation of concrete and effective measures. With greater commitment on the part of our governments and the international community to face NCDs. This should be reflected clearly in the SDGs for beyond 2015. In particular, we would like to highlight that tobacco control should be a national, multi-sectoral objective in all of our countries, since tobacco consumption is one of the main causes of mortality from NCDs in our countries. As can be seen in the report of the WHO and a recent survey of academic societies in seven Latin American countries, tobacco consumption causes 375,000 deaths per year and more than $33 billion are spent on health costs every year. 1,039 people die in these seven Latin American countries every year from tobacco consumption. And in other countries, it's 16,000 deaths. That is why we need a greater commitment in addressing tobacco consumption. And the main thing is to strengthen the framework convention as a necessary and essential instrument to prevent NCDs. We urge you, and we want to see this reflected as a commitment of governments and the world community. Allocating sufficient technical and financial resources for tobacco control. We also want to see in our countries a specific commitment with efficient measures of costs and taxes for tobacco. In my country, based on research by Latin American experts, if the price of cigarettes were to increase by 50%, 2,800 deaths per year would be saved. And we could also save many more worldwide. We foster the hope that this situation will take place, where we will see international commitments based on 2011. Civil society and the Framework Convention Alliance fully support these measures. Thank you, sir.
Trying to figure out how to use our own equipment here. Thank you very much, sir, for that intervention. You know, we are part of this region that the speaker just spoke about, the Latin American and Caribbean region, so it is alarming to hear from him that in his own country of Peru, some 70% die from these diseases. And I very much appreciate, sir, the linkage that you have made to that and to development overall. You also spoke about the need for national multi-sectoral approaches, which is something that was echoing comments made by Professor Yongo when he said that we need to develop multisectoral and whole-of-government approaches. And this is why we are trying to enable this process that we are engaged in to be as broad-ranging and broad-based as possible, because it's not something that we feel can be tackled by governments alone, even on a multisectoral governmental level. It's a multi-stakeholder process within which we are all engaged and all equally affected. So we very much value the comments and views that are going to be emerging during the course of this morning. Let me now give the floor to the representative of the Norwegian Cancer Society and NCD Alliance. You have the floor.
And as I said, I'm from the Norwegian Cancer Society and also representing the Norwegian NCD Alliance. I want to thank the President of the General Assembly to allow us to make a few remarks on the experience on working with the Norwegian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Development, and also to comment on the speech by Gerald Jonga and from the Danish NCD Alliance. As many of you know, Norway has been a key player in establishing a global NCD framework, and we want to use the opportunity to thank Norway for closely working with the civil society in both the processes leading up to the establishment of a global framework and also for walking the talk on the national arena, implementing a national NCD strategy in Norway in close cooperation with civil society. And we'll get back to that with a few remarks after lunch. The Norwegian Cancer Society has mainly been focusing on tobacco control in our international work, and we see the importance of using the momentum of the NCD framework to leverage support for implementation of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. And we are happy to see that Norway and Norwegian governments, they have made contributions to tobacco taxation technical assistance through the WHO. And we are very happy to see that Norway are doing that. However, as Norway is a large development aid donor, we see it as a big challenge to get full acceptance of the urgent need to fully include NCDs in development policies. And that includes strengthening civil society capacities on NCDs, as have been reflected on by the Danish NCD Alliance and from the panel. And the idea of a civil society fund to support national NCD alliances is fully supported by us. It's a very good idea. Allow myself to make three comments for the outcome document, or three recommendations. Firstly, we would ask member states to commit to raise knowledge and awareness about the cost-effective interventions provided in Appendix 3 to the Global Action Plan. I think it's important to always remember that Appendix 3 is a very key appendix to note. Secondly, member states need to commit to raise knowledge and awareness about the common solutions to global health challenges and aiming to leverage existing health services as entry point for NCD interventions. That's also a very crucial point. Thirdly, and as I've said, development aid donors should commit to include NCDs as a priority in their development aid policies, ensuring that these priorities are aligned with recipient countries' national development plans. Lastly, as a cancer society, and as I said, with long experience from supporting financially and working with tobacco control in African countries and in the Barents region, including Russia, we recommend that the outcome document explicitly mention the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. Thank you.
Thank you for that intervention. I know there are some others that have asked for the floor, but I'm going to turn now to the second panelist. If we have time, we can get to some of the others that have requested the floor after the next panelist speaks. It's now my pleasure to introduce Ms. Katie Dane, who, as I said, is the Executive Director of NCD Alliance. Ms. Dane represents a global network of civil society organizations working collectively to transform the fight against NCDs. She joined the NCD Alliance after 4 years at the International Diabetes Federation, which is a non-for-profit global federation of 220 member associations spanning 160 countries. Before she joined IDF, she was a gender policy advisor in the UK Government Equalities Office, where she was responsible for strategy, policy, and initiatives on violence against women and girls. Prior to that, she held a series of policy posts in UK-based health and development NGOs, including Womankind Worldwide and Terence Higgins Trust, a HIV and sexual health charity. Ms. Dane has a master's degree in violence, conflict, and international development from the School of Oriental and African Studies. Ms. Dane, you have the floor.
See, honourable guests, ladies and gentlemen, I firstly wish to thank the President of the General Assembly for inviting me to speak today at this very important civil society hearing on NCDs. Today I'm speaking on behalf of the NCD Alliance, a global network of 2,000 civil society organisations in 170 countries, dedicated to transforming the fight against non-communicable diseases together. In 2011, when governments adopted the UN Political Declaration on NCDs, they signed up to 11 specific commitments on international cooperation, the theme of today's roundtable. These commitments were underpinned by a political awakening on three main points: the global nature of the NCD epidemic and its sheer scale and impact. No country, rich or poor, is immune. No region is exempt. Number two, that these diseases are driven by symptoms of a much larger global problem: economic transition, rapid urbanisation, and globalisation, all of which require coordinated global action. And number three, that in many ways, NCDs are really questioning our long-held assumptions and paradigms of development, modernity, and what constitutes a good life in the most devastating and cruel way. And so 3 years on, what progress has been made against those 11 commitments on international cooperation? There undoubtedly has been significant progress and strides taken towards establishing the global architecture for NCDs, the Global Monitoring Framework, the Global NCD Action Plan, and the UN Interagency Task Force on NCDs. But for the purpose of today's discussion, I'll focus on the unfinished business of international cooperation. My 4 points draw upon the findings of an online consultation the NCD Alliance has just held, which gathered the views of civil society organisations around the world on priorities, progress and barriers in the NCD response to feed into the UN high-level review. Number one, mobilise adequate, predictable and sustained financial resources. 3 years ago, governments made that commitment here at the United Nations headquarters. Yet today, resources remain an Achilles heel of the global NCD response. In our NCD Alliance consultation, a shortage of resources was identified as one of the top barriers of progress at global, regional and national levels. NCDs remain under-prioritised in national health budgets and almost invisible in bilateral and multilateral funding channels. Just 1.2% of $31 billion US dollars in development assistance for health is allocated to NCDs. To accelerate progress, we recommend 4 priorities on resourcing. Firstly, develop a global investment case for action, because it is evident that today we are failing to make the case to those that control the purse strings, the Ministers of Finance, that investing upfront in NCD prevention and control makes sense. Number two, at the national level, governments should maximise innovative financing mechanisms that are proven to curb NCDs and to raise significant revenue, most notably tobacco taxation. Tobacco tax increases are the most effective single intervention to reduce tobacco use and one of the few public health interventions to provide a major source of revenue generation. WHO estimates that tobacco taxes bring in about $145 billion per year in excise tax alone. It is a win-win situation, which is also proven to be pro-poor. Also, in terms of bilateral development assistance, this has already been mentioned a lot today, but we need to see more bilateral development agencies taking up the mantle of NCDs. 1.2% of $31 billion, is just unacceptable considering the scale of the burden in low- and middle-income countries. We need champions like Denmark and Australia to put pressure on other bilateral development agencies to shift their policy. And we in civil society need to hold the OECD and its members to account on their promises in Paris, Accra and Busan. And at the global level, the NCD Alliance has always maintained that we do not want a new global fund for NCDs. We very much stand by this today. But what we do call for is greater integration of NCDs into existing financing mechanisms, for example, the Global Fund, to strengthen NCD programs and health systems in low- and middle-income countries. My second point, integrating NCDs into development cooperation. The UN Political Declaration from 2011 changed the way that we considered NCDs as a poverty and a human development issue, recognising that NCDs are one of the major challenges to human development in the 21st century. Although NCDs were sidelined in the Millennium Development Goals, 2014 and 2015 are the years for the final decisions on new goals and targets for the Sustainable Development Agenda. Health, with an increasing focus on non-communicable diseases, has been gaining traction in the global discussions on post-2015. But we cannot afford to be complacent. At the end, it is member states who will decide on the goals and targets. To prevail among competing priority settings is one hurdle. To provide evidence of well-established targets and data collection systems is another. But we in the NCD community have the political mandate, we have the evidence, and we have the solutions behind us in recommending a standalone target on NCDs. Our recommendation is a target to reduce NCD premature mortality by at least 40% by 2030. Securing good health and well-being is the means and ends to sustainable human development. And including NCDs in post-2015, supported by strong means of implementation, such as the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, will increase attention and direct much assistance needed to the millions of people at risk of living with these diseases. We are counting on member states to make bold commitments for NCDs in post-2015 at the UN High-Level Review. Do not let this opportunity pass by. My third point. Strengthen multi-sectoral partnerships and mechanisms. In 2011, governments recognised that NCDs fundamentally require multi-sectoral action, a whole-of-government approach, and collaborative partnerships at all levels. The mantra was and remains, NCDs are everybody's business. No one sector can solve this epidemic alone. But despite recognition and commitments, there remain significant barriers in operationalising whole-of-government approaches and multi-sectoral partnerships in action. Efforts such as the Global Coordination Mechanism really fail to walk the talk on multi-sectoral action, with little opportunity for meaningful engagement of NGOs. While carefully protecting from real, perceived and potential conflicts of interest, we urgently need to strengthen our partnerships and mechanisms that facilitate multi-sectoral action, and particularly strengthen allegiances with non-health actors. My final point, build a people's movement on NCDs. Above all, we need a civil society movement that is led by people affected or living with NCDs, is rooted in human rights and social justice, and is active in holding governments to account. In particular, governments must hear the voices of people with NCDs at all levels, from global policy to service design and monitoring on the ground. The HIV/AIDS movement has shown how effective the involvement of people living with HIV/AIDS has been to the global response. Only then, with this bottom-up approach, will we see services that truly reflect the needs of people with NCDs. We also need to adopt a watchdog role to monitor the implementation of political commitments. Accountability is absolutely crucial. We need to keep our government's feet to the fire and jolt our political leaders into recognising that we are mobilised, we are watching, and we are keeping the rest of the world informed. This is a significant task, but the NCD Alliance has started to provide assistance and guidance on how this can be done, already working with national partners to develop civil society status reports in South Africa, Brazil, the Caribbean, and East Africa. But as has been mentioned already today, this requires significant capacity building, which the NCD civil society movement in low- and middle-income countries is crying out for. We therefore urge member states to make commitments to increase the provision of capacity building, including considering the setup of a civil society fund on NCDs. The NCD Alliance is doing our bit, but a lot more needs to be done. In conclusion, the UN High-Level Review on NCDs on the 10th to the 11th of July is an exceptional opportunity. We urge Member States to reaffirm commitments made on international cooperation in the 2011 Political Declaration and make new commitments to address the unfinished business that has been mentioned. We cannot afford to delay. Thank you.
I thank Ms. Dean for that quality presentation that we have just heard. She reminds us in a very succinct way, no country is immune, no region is exempt. You know, we spend a lot of time in this forum speaking about development in terms of sustainable development, but development is also about quality of life. And as you've heard Ms. Dane say today, NCDs is challenging what constitutes a good life. I'm glad that she mentioned some of the things that we are concerned with primarily in this roundtable, which is resource mobilization, whether bilateral, multilateral, or regional. And in this regard, I know what she's saying, that NCDs, in terms of the proportion of ODA that is devoted to this, it's just minuscule. What we heard earlier from the Norwegian representative, and I have to applaud a country like Norway and the previous speaker from Denmark, who are both doing outstanding jobs and are models in terms of the amount of ODA that is being directed towards tackling NCDs. Let me open the floor now. I had some people previously that had asked for the floor before Ms. Dane started her presentation, so let me now recognize the distinguished representative of Pakistan. You have the floor.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I'm not for Pakistan, but I see that my light is red, so I'm happy to speak. I'm Bill Jeffrey with the Center for Science and Public Interest in Canada and the Conflict of Interest Coalition. I'd like to make three general points, Mr. Chair. The first relating to the possibility of negotiating a treaty related to NCD risks. The second relating to conflicts of interest. And finally, a specific comment on the zero draft. In our view, we need to begin negotiations on a framework convention for the marketing of food, alcoholic beverages, and products that promote sedentary living, analogous to the framework convention on tobacco control. This will help bring clarity to the legality of subsidies, taxes, labeling requirements, changes to compositional standards, advertising, and other measures regarding products in the marketplace that, which measures could help reduce non-communicable diseases. Many of these measures are either contrary to, under the current law, contrary to the sanitary and phytosanitary agreement, the technical barriers to trade agreement, codex standards, the GATT agreements, or they have such uncertain legal status as to put a chilling effect on national implementation. Trade agreements, Mr. Chair, are negotiated by the same member states as public health treaties, and so we need to resolve this lack of clarity. Secondly, with regard to conflicts of interest, the standards regarding conflicts of interest have to go beyond general platitudes. They have to be particularized enough to ensure that companies and their associations and the experts and NGOs they fund are not put in the position of exercising discretion in the service of the United Nations or the World Health Organization. Now, this is especially true in the case of companies that sell foods, alcohol, tobacco, pharmaceutical products, and medical technology companies products. And finally, with regard to the zero draft, we've looked at it closely, and we understand it's the beginning process, but we took special note of sections 4H through J and noted that they don't seem to apply the same approach as the earlier sections related to tobacco and alcohol, and it seems that they are precluding the possibility of so-called hard law at the international level or the national level, and I think that requires some further reflection. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thank the representative of the Center for Science in the Public Interest and Conflict of Interest Coalition Network. Thanks also for being alive to the opportunity of jumping in, because Pakistan had in fact declined the initial offer to speak. Let me now recognize the representative of the National Center for Public Policy Research. You have the floor.
Okay, thank you. I'm Jeff Steyer from the National Center for Public Policy Research. I thank the chair and the entire panel for allowing the comments. I've been very heartened to hear that there is a consensus both on this panel and in the opening session that there is a need for all parties to have a seat at the table, not only governments and NGOs, which I represent, but industry itself. We can't solve the problem of NCDs without engagement from industry. And I'm hopeful that there is almost a change of perspective here, that industry should not be seen as the cause of public health problems, as it has been in the past, because we didn't solve problems that way. But if we see industry as a potential partner in a regulated environment to help solve problems, I think we could actually do some good. I would encourage UN high-level meetings outcome document to include specific examples of how the private sector can be engaged to fight NCDs. I see two particular examples in two of the big areas. Number one is food, and number two is tobacco. On food, we should encourage the use of food technology to do things like lower salt content in foods, encourage the safe use of artificial sweeteners to help lower sugar consumption so that people can improve their quality of life and have high quality of life, make the decisions that individuals want while still protecting public health. And that's an area where the private sector with government partnership and leadership can actually do some good to fight NCDs. And the number one preventable cause of death in so many countries is tobacco. And I think that's an excellent example of where we've seen the private sector, demonized as they have been in the past, appropriately so, now beginning to offer innovation and technologies that can help reduce the toll of tobacco-related disease. And we've seen just over the past few years, e-cigarettes have done so much good for so many smokers who have been trying to quit tobacco use. And while no form of nicotine is safe or should be encouraged, it is harm reduction is a standard public health approach. And I encourage the committee to consider tobacco harm reduction, the use of non-tobacco products, including e-cigarettes, to lower the risk of disease. And that's a way that the private sector and the governments can work together to reduce NCDs. Thank you for your time.
I thank you. You know, when we speak about multi-stakeholder, it really is going to mean all of us working together. And I hear you loud and clear. We cannot look at industry as the enemy, per se. We have to look at it as a partner. And you're proposing that we do this within a regulated environment, and that has to be how I think we approach it. We can't just say, well, you know, you are against my interests. All of us have to come together and be able to work collectively. So I very much appreciate those comments. I have several requests for the floor. I'm going to take two more before I go to the next one. You have the floor, madam.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Union for International Cancer Control. This point really speaks to some of the messages brought out in Katie Dane from the NCD Alliance's presentation about the role that civil society can play both in accountability and also capacity building. And we would really like to highlight the importance of not losing sight of the basics. Firstly, the need for development of comprehensive national NCD action plans that span the full continuum of care, and recognising that national cancer control plans are a key stepping stone to developing strong NCD plans, We are collaborating with others, including WHO and other national and global NGOs, through the International Cancer Control Partnership to provide a web portal that collates all existing cancer plans, currently over 140, with a plan to augment those with existing NCD plans, and aim to share both best practices and planning resources, and in a further phase to look at providing technical assistance for implementation. And secondly, we would stress the importance of the implementation of NCD surveillance frameworks. Solid data monitoring risk factors and determinants, mortality and morbidity, and health systems response are critical for the development of effective NCD plans. As an example of a multi-agency initiative that is led by IARC and supported by a number of other national, regional, and international NGOs, the Global Initiative for Cancer Registration aims to develop capacity to produce reliable, high-quality data on the cancer burden and is implemented through a series of regional resource hubs that support the establishment of population-based cancer registries, providing technical assistance and educational support, as well as collaborative research. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to recognize one more speaker on my left, but looking on my left, I can't but single out the distinguished Sir George Alain, Professor Emeritus of PAHO, who is in our presence. Welcome, Sir George. The gentleman to your left, you have the floor, sir. That being you, looking around. Yes, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you very much. I am Bo Norving. I'm speaking on behalf of the World Stroke Organization, and stroke is one of the key NCDs. So I want to thank the UN today for organizing this event. Any stroke is a bad thing, but preventable stroke is a tragedy. So the evidence that influencing the risk factors lead to reduction in stroke and other NCDs is massive, and we will be happy from NGOs and academia to continue to support this evidence. There is now recent evidence that just addressing the agreed risk factor targets and premature mortality from the four main NCDs will decrease to levels that are close to the 25 by 25 target, with most of these benefits seen in low and middle income countries. So we need a more ambitious targets, in particular for tobacco control. Looking back from 2011, I think we also probably underestimate the problem of informing member states and representatives what enormous benefits can be made. They are even larger than what we have thought. We should not only look at mortality, also morbidity and disabilities and the secondary effects. So we have very, very effective and cost-effective interventions. These factors have not been implemented. I would like to support the recommendation by Katie Day on how to proceed, also from our society, also support the need for reliable surveillance, as just said from a previous speaker. Preventable NCD is a tragedy. We share this responsibility now to act rapidly. The evidence is even stronger than we have thought, and we need to scale it up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Let me now recognize the gentleman in the glasses with a dark hair, striped tie, dark suit between two ladies. Two in from my right. You have the floor. Put up your hand, please, so they can see you. Your light has to turn red before you start speaking. Put your hand up, please.
It's on this side.
I'm going to ask.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, and thank you for your perseverance as well. So I'm Dr. Ray from the UK Need for Nutrition Education Innovation Programme based in Cambridge. I think it's fabulous that we're hearing about global strategies which feed in to health policy, really, through the very strong arm of advocacy in a way that brings together different sectors, different countries, and really encourages everyone to move forward in unison. And of course, we've been hearing that treatment alone cannot suffice. So the nutrition professions, which is the sector I represent in my neck of the woods, really is very relevant to the philosophy of prevention, particularly through diet and lifestyle advice, both at the policy level, but also at other levels. I think we're also talking today not just about the formulation of global policies, but policies which can actually be locally sensitive, locally adaptive, and most importantly, implemented so that we can move forward through action. So in that respect, I'd just like to say that the way many of us see this sort of approach to health policy is really as part of a chain of events where there are antecedent events that feed into health policy and also the different actions arising from it. And of course, any chain of events is as good as the weakest links in that chain. So really to elaborate slightly more on that, I think feeding into health policy, there is the need to recognise the role of research-based evidence, and particularly in preventative areas such as diet and lifestyle, that evidence is rich, complex, and quite difficult to interpret, particularly when thinking at a global level, because there is just so much local variation, yet there are global commonalities. On the other side, on the side of action, there is the necessity to translate policy into practice, both clinical and public health practice, and the interface with healthcare practitioners, as well as the interface with civil society that has a responsibility to protect and promote its own health. So what I'd really be very interested in are the thoughts and reflections of the panel on whether or not there are areas to think about to prevent disconnect between local versus global, disconnect between the evidence base and policy, and also potentially disconnect between policy and actual implementation through practice, and implementation that can be monitored, evaluated, and the impact of which can be assessed so that we can really tell whether or not we're making tangible progress towards our goals, both at global and local levels.
I thank you. I'm now going to resume the panel presentations. Let me introduce Professor Giorgio Calabrese. As I had told you, he's of the Federico II University in Naples. The professor has a degree in medicine and surgery and specializes in food science. He served as a member of the European Food Safety Authority in Brussels from 2002 to 2008 and is currently a member of the National Committee for the Food Safety Ministry of Health in Italy. Professor Calabrese is a teacher of power and human nutrition at the University of Federico II in Naples and also at the University of Turin. He's an active member of the New York Academy of Sciences and of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. Interestingly, during this World Cup period, the professor is the dietitian for Juventus Football Club and is the author of international and national publications and has participated in many international congresses as an official speaker. We are delighted to welcome Professor Giorgio Calabrese. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished colleagues. I was invited to speak on behalf of the scientific community as a nutritionist. Among the topics of this meeting, one of the most important is the mobilization of resources to address non-communicable diseases. It's not clear, however, the direction that this mobilization should take. It's my educated opinion that any decision, in particular the allocation of economic resources, should be taken solely on the basis of scientific criteria. Academia could and should provide a universally agreed open definition of the standard that defines clinical parameter overcoming existing disagreements. Scientific paper to support decision-making on health policies should be universally acknowledged and most authoritative and reliable. the scientific community can provide a decisive contribution to identify the regulation, analysis, and processing best suited for monitoring on NCDs so as to guarantee access to data that are reliable, scientifically correct, and comparable at the global level. This will help make a decision process considerably more effective. With regard to obesity, mainstream nutrition agree that it's a problem stemming from several factors, the most important being genetic, excessive caloric intake, and the lack of physical activity. Recent years, however, there has been a growing trend to use indicators that lack a scientific basis and to demonize individual ingredients, such as fats, salt, or sugar, without considering that there are cooking techniques that can reduce the nutritional quality of any food. So the focus should be on educating consumers about proper nutrition. In 2011, Global Report of NCDs, for example, physical activity was mentioned at the same level of importance as diet in the remedy of obesity. Now, I remark that the trend today is in favor of regulation, taxation, red traffic light labeling, or even warning similar to cigarette packs to qualify food as unhealthy, whereas I'm of the opinion that more attention should be given to physical activity and good nutrition. As any respected and competent nutrition can testify, physical activity is the first remedy to reduce obesity along with education about proper nutrition. In addition, using a regulation or taxation to modify the behavior of consumers deprives them of the freedom of choice and could expose them to manipulation. For example, the past 15 years have seen a steady decline in the standard defining the boundaries between what is considered healthy and unhealthy. This has occurred with the level of blood pressure, which was lowered from 90 over 140 to 80 over 120. Blood glucose from 150 to 126. Cholesterol from 250 to 220. With having more pressure to lower it in a range of 180 to 200. The same happened with the body mass index in many countries. Millions of people around the world were kept one day and found out that they had overnight become at risk because the threshold for being considered overweight based on BMI was reduced from 27.8 for men and 27.3 for women to 25 for both sexes. So, what for many was not even a problem, or at most was only a small handicap from the social point of view, suddenly became a health issue. The issue of scientific validity recently surfaced with the draft guideline by the WHO on daily sugar intake. A conditional recommendation was put forward based on scientific evidence of low or even very low quality, as honestly admitted by the WHO itself. I'm well aware, like everyone else, that there is indeed a serious problem of obesity in the world. But we must be careful to deal with it in the most scientifically correct way. We must consider that the wise, morbid, strange, hard obesity is a real disease. Overweight and moderate instead obesity and instead risk factor to be avoided and not a real disease, except for those serious cases that go well behind to BMI of 30, considering moderate obesity, as a disease as no scientific foundation, and it foster attitude of nutritional extremism instead of education. Science suggests it's important to invest significantly in sport program, particularly in school, but also in workplace, to promote not only the prevention of obesity, but also the positive effects related to sport. On the contrary, now we are at the point of creating new lesions of patients by lowering the threshold of what is to be considered healthy. So that millions of people now ostensibly bear the burden of an illness does not really exist. For example, a person with body mass index on 27 does not have a really serious problem requiring treatment. Yet this level is now considered overweight and prone to obesity. Shouldn't we question what's lie behind certain demands which I personally believe to be irresponsible? For example, one, treating moderate obesity as a disease, or denying consumers the freedom of choice. Consumers should be given freedom of choice and nutritional education. In particular, they need to know that they will not become obese if they eat this or that food, but will if they consume in excess or if they don't lead a healthy lifestyle that can be achieved only through a balanced and varied diet and physical activity. Let me say, as an Italian, I'm inclined to believe that Mediterranean diet, which is recognized by UNESCO as a cultural heritage of humanity, is a virtuous diet because it's based on a wide and well-balanced varied food consumed in moderation. What makes this diet good is not only its components, but the way the food is cooked and prepared. I invite you to think carefully and not to give into the panic or fear and misinformation. Moderate obesity is not a disease. It's a risk factor or prevent. Of course, serious cases do need treatment. However, if we really want to encourage healthier lifestyles, we need to induce people of all ages to engage in physical activity and provide them with adequate nutritional education. Regulations dictating choice and behavior are not only deeply restrictive, but they are also likely to be wrong from a scientific point of view. To summarize, let's ensure that we take into consideration in our approach the following developmental steps. One, acceptance of the primary role of interventions based on lifestyle as a point of reference. Two, acceptance of the prime role of physical activity as cornerstone of a healthy lifestyle with good nutrition. 3, refusal or element based on strong scientific evidence. And the last, 4, involvement of people through education, empowering them to be the protagonist of healthy lifestyle. Ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, data, solid, scientific, reliable data before we can end decision. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
I thank Professor Calabresi for his thought-provoking remarks. Ladies and gentlemen, in the hour and 10 minutes that we have left, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take 4 interventions, and then I'm going to ask the panelists, any of them that want to weigh in on what we have heard today as coming from the floor. And please, you're also at liberty to comment on any of the points that either of you may have raised in your own presentations. So I'm going to begin with the representative of Kenya, followed by the American College of Cardiology. In terms of the American College of Cardiology, I happen to know your seat number. I'm just trying to give the sound technician some guidance. You're in seat 1412, so you'll be the second speaker, followed by the International Association of Hospice and Palliative Care, who is in seat 1407, and we haven't had a child perspective as yet all morning. So I'm going to invite, I hope I'm not surprising you, madam, but I'm going to invite the representative of NCD Child to say something if she so desires. So let me start by the representative of Kenya. You have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Ambassador. And I want to thank all the panelists for the very insightful remarks and presentations that they made. It feels like having a free health consultation, for which I'm very grateful. And in the interest of time, I had a pretty lengthy intervention, but maybe I could just go to one that is very specific and for which I would appreciate a comment or an answer from the panelists, and maybe recognize Professor Yonga, whom I would also appreciate his intervention in this regard. When we talk about bringing on board all the stakeholders in the prevention, treatment, and care of relating to NCDs, the private sector definitely comes to my mind, because definitely, and we have all agreed that governments are not able to adequately address the issue of NCDs. So my question is on how governments themselves can incentivize the private sector, so that both the private sector within the health sector as well as those without the health sector to be interested in making or to make effective investment in NCD prevention, treatment, and care by making it part of their social corporate investment policy. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I thank you. Could we now hear from the representative of the American College of Cardiology? You have the floor.
Thank you, Your Excellency. I'm Dr. John Gordon Harold. I'm the immediate past president of the American College of Cardiology. I'm here representing the ACC's 50,000 global members and our 32 international chapters that have united in support of the 25 by 25 goal. ACC is a proud supporter of the NCD Alliance, the NCD Roundtable, and the Global Cardiovascular Disease Task Force. We thank you for the Zero Draft, which provides a wonderful benchmark of the progress to date since the UN Summit on NCDs in 2011. We are here to reinforce several vital points for strengthening the document and to facilitate activities that are resourced, robust, and measurable. To begin, no issue is greater in regards to the NCDs than the current under-resourcing of the global efforts. For years, we have been referencing 2008 data that showed while NCDs contribute to over 60% of mortality worldwide, they receive only 3% of development assistance for health. Recent reports from the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation show that, in fact, this percentage has decreased to 1.3% despite the rising recognition of NCDs politically. Obviously, this is a trend that must be reversed if we are to meet the 25 by 25 goal. The outcome document must address this need head-on with strong language regarding the inclusions of NCDs in the post-2015 development agenda, with a specific reference to a dedicated NCD target or targets. In addition, the outcomes document represents a crucial opportunity to drive national action as the most urgent need in the global NCD movement. Just as the American College of Cardiology leverages our 32 international chapters to drive country-level activities to improve treatment for and raise awareness of heart disease, we must be working together to identify successful strategies at the national level and holding countries to account for implementing programs to successfully prevent and treat non-communicable diseases. Finally, we won't be able to do this without strong monitoring mechanisms. At the American College of Cardiology, our National Cardiovascular Data Registry program monitors over 25 million patient records to understand the ongoing longitudinal treatment of cardiovascular disease. We are proud to have expanded this registry to the Asia Pacific, Latin America, and Middle East regions within the last several years. This has driven novel insights into variances in global cardiovascular care. It has spurred research on best practices across countries and brought together investigators to create science. We must be implementing similar measures to monitor the global NCD burden. Doing anything less would be tantamount to building a car without an odometer to understand how fast the vehicle is traveling. We thank the United Nations General Assembly and the World Health Organization for your ongoing bold commitments to the global burden of non-communicable diseases, and we stand by you in a commitment to a future where our goal of 25 by 25 is a reality. Thank you, Your Excellency.
Thank you, Dr. Harold. Your points have been well made, loud and clear. I now give the floor to the representative of the International Association of Hospice and Palliative Care.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador, Your Excellency. My name is Jim Cleary. I'm a board member of the International Association of Hospice and Palliative Care. I'm also at the University of Wisconsin, where I direct a WHO Collaborating Center for Pain Policy and Palliative Care. I do want to reiterate what Katie Dane said, that NCDs is everyone's business. But it's also not everyone's business just in terms of choosing the selective area they want. It includes prevention, treatment, and care. And palliative care was mentioned four times in the 2011 document. And personally, I continue to work with Jamaica on improving palliative care in that country. But it's not also just the WHO's business, and it is great that the UN is considering this, but we need to engage all sectors of the UN. And in 2016, an UNGAS, a UN General Assembly special session, will be devoted to drugs. And this includes controlled substances, including morphine, fentanyl. The Single Convention for Narcotic Drugs is, in fact, a medical document ensuring access to these medicines. But it's very difficult to get funding to improve access to these controlled substances because many foundations want a return on investment. How do we measure the return on investment for relief of suffering? As my colleague Sir George has often said, the relief of suffering is a mark of our humanity as a society. It's absolutely critical to do this. I think conflict of interest has been raised. We heard earlier that it is $3 a week to actually provide relief with morphine medicines. We are excluded from being engaged with the private sector because of conflict of interest laws. There is not a huge amount of money to be made in access to morphine, but we really need to make sure that we can work with the private sector to ensure access to these controlled medicines, which the pharmaceutical industry is an essential component of their supply. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. I'm glad to hear that you're doing some work in Jamaica, and thank you for introducing this very important facet. We heard from Ambassador Cowell today that we can't treat our way out of this NCD's problem. So palliative care, I think, is going to be vital in terms of how we approach it. Let me now call on the representative of NCD Child. You have the floor, madam.
Yes, thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Dr. Michelle Farmer, and I'm speaking on behalf of NCD Child and on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is the secretariat for NCD Child, in support for children and adolescents who represent 43% of the world's population. We welcome the opportunity to share with you in this discussion about non-communicable diseases, and we hope that you will remember our message very simply, that you must remember children and adolescents in this campaign for the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. NCD Child, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics, have been actively participating in the effort to include and to consider the needs of children and adolescents as it relates to non-communicable diseases. And in March of this year, NCD Child hosted an international meeting in Port of Spain, Trinidad, to focus on this issue. Along the lines and in support of what was previously said about the need to hear from the voices of those who experience these problems, to the credit of NCD Child and the other organizations who are participating in the meeting in Trinidad, we heard from the voices of youth. We heard from the voices of children and adolescents who are experiencing these problems on a daily basis. And we learned a great deal from them, and I certainly think that all of you would join me in welcoming future opportunities to include the voices of young people who are experiencing these problems on a daily basis. That what we learned from them is that there is a significant unmet need for the NCD prevention, for effective treatments, and for real advocacy for the campaign for the prevention and control of NCDs as it directly impacts the health needs of children. I think as we consider the development of a holistic and comprehensive approach for global prevention and control of NCDs, as we look to the post-2015 action plan and activities, it will be important and essential to include and consider adolescents and children in this campaign, that organizations like NCD Child, organizations like the American Academy of Pediatrics, can play a central role because they offer an opportunity to be child-focused and adolescent-focused in our considerations. That civil society organizations like these should be included as part of the global monitoring process to ensure equity in protecting the rights and the health of children and adolescents. Remember that each day, 18,000 children die, and some of them die due to preventable causes that are related to chronic diseases, like heart disease, rheumatic heart disease, like respiratory illnesses such as asthma and cancer. And the pathway to reducing morbidity and mortality for children and adolescents, and also for adults, is careful consideration of the needs of children and adolescents. And I thank you again for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Dr. Farmer. You know, I'm glad you mentioned, well, endorsed the point that we had heard earlier, that we have to hear the voices of those who are suffering from NCDs. And I think, you know, there are opportunities for NGOs, civil society, private sector groups, everybody represented here, to partner with those of us at the member state level to use opportunities of high-level meetings that happen throughout the calendar in terms of working with us to sponsor side events that can draw attention to this issue. There is a Small Island Developing States International meeting coming up in Samoa in September, the first week of September. As everybody should know, the Pacific countries suffer greatly from the burden of NCDs with high levels of obesity and other things. You know, that might be an opportunity to approach one of the member states and say on the margins of that high-level meeting, it's a third international conference on small island developing states, maybe we can put on something, maybe get the voices of children and adolescents to be heard during a function like that. It's just something for you as non-member states, external actors, to consider. Let me now just invite any of our three panelists to weigh in on any of the points that they've heard this morning. Let me start with Katie. Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to pick up on two points that have been raised so far. The question around the disconnect between the global to the local and the specific role of the private sector that's been raised by quite a few different delegates so far. The first one around the disconnect between the global to the local. The NCD Alliance's view on the UN high-level review coming up is that that has to be the main theme of it, because what we're seeing at the moment and what the UN Secretary-General's progress report really highlights is that there has been significant progress at the global level, very much driven and led by WHO and member states in terms of setting up that global architecture. But what to date we really haven't seen is that to translate into national action and implementation. And so it's our hope that the UN high-level review will come out with an outcome document that has very, very strong national commitments for action that will obviously, as you say, really reflect the fact that the global framework needs to be adapted and tailored for local and regional contexts, but that it's really the time for governments to be developing national NCD plans, national NCD targets, and a national monitoring framework for themselves, very much drawing upon the HIV-AIDS 3-1s principle of one plan, one target, and one monitoring mechanism. The second point I'd like to make is in regard to the role of the private sector. I think the UN political declaration was very clear in the sense that it was quite unique in that regard by identifying four specific roles for the private sector in paragraph 44. And those roles, to summarise, were around as marketers, as producers,
as innovators, and as employers. Those four roles really have to be the centrepiece for where we see the private sector fitting in, obviously whilst carefully protecting against the real perceived and potential conflicts of interest. But I think the other really important point that the political declaration does make is that the tobacco industry has no role in public health, and that has to be a continued focus for us all going forward in terms of the private sector's role. Thank you.
Thank you. Professor Calabrese, you have the floor.
I think that's how many people, that's the young, the child, or adult, and the colleagues, or cardiology, or pediatrism. I think that is very important to do an educational politics in the school and in the all kind of place of work, because in our future is about the child, that they are eating now a lot of fat and no more a lot of sugar, and we are speaking only the sugar, but now of fat. And I think that's when with the colleagues of cardiology, there is a lot of problem, because a lot saturated fats, but a kind of unsaturated, have a problem for the heart, for the liver, for our health. And we change, and we have the harmonization, not the problem the food, but the cooking food, the technique of cooking, because if I am eating the pasta is good, pasta and tomato, I'm eating the pasta and other kind of products, they are rich in fat. There are problem. It's not the pasta. It's the same. It's the egg. The egg with the fried, or the potatoes is fried. It's the child have a problem, because in the future they have to change the way of nutrition and a long physical activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Younger. You have the floor.
Thank you. I would just like to reiterate some few points and then address some of the issues raised by my colleague. I think we need to request all countries globally to prioritize NCDs as a human development agenda in the post-MDG era. And the whole government multi-sectoral approach by low and middle income countries needs to be emphasized, and the government needs to provide leadership for this, for both the private sector and also the government sector. And then the strengthening of the civil society organizations in all countries with emphasis to north-south and south-south and triangular initiatives. And about increasing funding for NCDs, again, we are not looking for new funding, but prioritization of existing resources, and also increased support for the global declarations that support NCD initiatives. Now, about lifestyle, lifestyle in low and middle income countries has a different meaning. It implies that you have choice. And if you look at the upstream factors that obtain in low and middle income countries, especially as far as food availability and food pricing, there is no choice. And nutritional transition makes most inhabitants of this country move from a situation whereby there is undernutrition to a situation whereby there is overnutrition without necessarily passing through a healthy period. This is because of the problems of food sufficiency and food security, and then the global influence of the types of foods that are available, advertising, and all other upstream factors that no longer make this a lifestyle issue. So it's very important that the issues of legislation that support choices, food availability and food choices, are taken into account when we implement some of these declarations and global declarations and policies, thereby emphasizing the point that one of us raised, that you may have global policies or global declarations, but there must be adaptive implementations at local level because of the prevailing circumstances, socioeconomic circumstances at local level. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Yonga. I have on my list a request to speak by the representative of Young Health Program for the sound engineer. They're in seat number 13 at 93. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Young Health Program is a global initiative that aims to positively impact the health of adolescents in marginalized communities worldwide with a special focus on NCD prevention. First of all, let me congratulate the work that NCD Child has been doing to try to raise the profile of children and adolescents living or at risk to develop NCDs later in life. Secondly, I would like to take this opportunity to make some recommendations to be considered for inclusion in the outcome document to be adopted at the high-level meeting next month. First, children and adolescents should be explicitly called out as a central part of the discussion of progress achieved in the prevention and control of NCDs. This is something absolutely important to accelerate the progress on prevention and control of NCDs for two main reasons. First, there is a large, nowadays, there is the largest cohort of adolescents and young people in the world, with percentage increasing up to 60% in some developing countries. Similarly, evidence has shown that risk behaviors usually start or are reinforced in adolescence. In fact, it has been estimated that over half of the NCD deaths every year are associated with behaviors that began or were reinforced during adolescence. Second, we would like to recommend that the outcome document should acknowledge that improvements in data on NCDs in children and adolescents are urgently needed, including the systematic monitoring of NCD risk factors, morbidity and mortality, and health system responses. Third, we would like to recommend that both the second WHO Global Status Report on NCDs to be produced this year and the 2016 report in the implementation of the 2011 political declaration should contain a specific section on children and adolescents. And finally, in order to our final recommendation is to how to enhance international cooperation for NCDs. We would like to recommend that the Global Coordination Mechanism or the Interagency Task Force should publish a list of activities where cooperation is required, indicating objective expected outcomes at time frames, so it might be easier for organizations interested in cooperate to make commitments on the prevention and control of NCDs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I thank you. I next have on my list the representative of the Public Health Institute, seat number 1343. You have the floor.
Thank you, Excellency Representative Rattray and the distinguished panelists. I am Dr. Lynn Silver from the Public Health Institute, also professor at the University of Brasilia. I'm speaking also on behalf of Consumers International and the World Obesity Federation. The Public Health Institute salutes the United Nations for its commitment to advancing the prevention and control of non-communicable diseases. First, let me endorse the critically important observations of the NCD Alliance, Professor Yonga, the College of Cardiology, and CSPI on resources, the Millennium Development Goals, the watchdog role of civil society, and conflicts of interest. But my comments will focus on dietary risks. 11 million people die each year due to dietary risks, according to the Institute for Health Metrics, possibly now constituting the leading risk factor for death globally. Worldwide, the proportion of overweight and obese adults has increased by 2013 to over 37%. A recent study, which truly floored me, found that 50% of Chinese adults were pre-diabetic and 11.6% diabetic. And here in New York City, where I worked for many years, one-third of adults are now diabetic or pre-diabetic. As Ambassador Cowell pointed out, we cannot treat our way out of that. Our food systems are also accounting for 29% of greenhouse gas emissions globally, making them a leading contributor to climate change, and simultaneously the security of our food supply is one of the prime victims of climate change effects. This unacceptable situation is increasingly driven by global food commerce that intensively markets and transports highly processed foods, sugar-sweetened beverages, too much salt and junk, even to the poorest of the poor and to our youngest and most vulnerable citizens. The food industry does have a role in the solutions, but they will not be going there without a strong push from the international community. We call upon you to draw upon one of the strongest tools in our toolbox. In 2003, the World Health Organization, as was mentioned earlier, adopted the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, the most significant use of its treaty-making powers. 178 nations have ratified the convention, which, combined with resources and mobilized civil society, is now a leading force in reducing tobacco use. Dietary risks are now of a similar magnitude to tobacco as a problem. To address the many parallel fiscal, information, agricultural supplies, marketing, and monitoring challenges posed by our globalized food supply, 1 month ago at the World Health Assembly, our organizations and others launched a call for a similar, clear, and binding international framework for a healthier and more sustainable food supply, a framework convention on food, as was raised earlier. We strongly urge member states and the United Nations to exercise their leadership by initiating such a convention to prevent diet-related non-communicable disease. The time for action is now. The price of inaction, as we have seen, too high. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me now call on the representative of the International Alliance of Patients Organizations. Madam, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. As you say, I am here representing the International Alliance of Patient Organizations. Because I am more passionate in my original language, which is Spanish, I will talk in Spanish.
We are an alliance representing more than 365 million patients who have chronic diseases throughout the world. And this panel, which is giving us the opportunity to speak about our problems and the assistance we need for cooperation and to solve the problem of NCDs, we as an alliance have identified three key problems in terms of cooperation. Number one, access to information and to sustainable databases which allow us to take well-informed decisions. Number two is access to infrastructure on an ad hoc basis to be able to use services and to have timely diagnosis. And number three is access to palliative care and medications, especially in developing countries where diagnostics are now happening very late and the patients need to have access to the final care to alleviate pain. And in the context of universal assurance, I ask all of you, what should be the assistance and cooperation to development in order to have the best processes and access to controlling NCDs? How should we move on to action? This is the key question. After several years after the high-level meeting, we still have problems with information and data. Some member countries still have no national plans to control NCDs. And we're still speaking about the fact that in the developing world, people continue to die without access to treatment and diagnostics. Who should be called upon to contribute, to determine who will determine the conflicts of interest that we face when mobilizing resources? And finally, what should we do to improve on information so that we can strengthen support for cooperation, especially considering the interest of the World Bank, of the Inter-American Development Bank, of the IMF, and all other financials and philanthropic organizations, which do not yet have sufficient information on the basis of which to help civil society and governments in offering financial support and technical cooperation? I do believe, however, that it is important to work to ensure that there are political decisions. Not only should we appeal to agencies and multilateral bodies to this effect, I believe that a solution to the problems of NCDs lies with governments. We can contribute, but those who take the decisions and who carry out national, regional, and global plans are the governments and health ministries. And those who decide on their budgets are the ministries of economy and finance in the various countries. Therein lies the basic problem, and all of us have to focus on that. We must all remain committed, and the International Alliance for Patients Organizations is here in order to help and support. Thank you.
I thank the International Alliance of Patients Organizations for its intervention. And now let me take the lady all the way in the back from Help Page International, seat number 1479. You have the floor, madam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Rachel Albone. I work for HelpAge International, which is an international network of NGOs working to support and protect the rights of older people around the world. I want to raise a concern I've had while listening to the speakers and the interventions so far this morning. A number of people have referred to premature deaths, and we have heard specific statistics for people between the ages of 30 and 70. This concerns me because nobody in the room is talking about people in older age. Yet we know that people aged 60 and over account for 75% of deaths from NCDs in low and middle income countries. I'm sure my colleagues that have spoken from the children and youth perspectives will also be concerned about this, given the age group 30 to 70 also excludes people under the age of 30. Ambassador Sally Cowell said the response to NCDs was a matter of equity and human rights. I would like to ask how we can achieve a human rights-based response to NCDs if certain age groups, certain sectors of the population are being deprioritized within our response. Thank you.
Next on my list, I have the representative of the German Federation of Food Law and Food Science. You have the floor.
Angela Kohl from the German Federation of Food Law and Food Science. The BLL is the representative of the German food sector, both in Germany and at the European level. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to contribute to the discussion. I would like to come back to the presentation of Professor Calabrese, who mentioned the importance of the scientific evidence and the importance of physical activity and multifactorial causes of obesity. Well, we all share a common interest in tackling the problem of non-communicable diseases. As the causes of NCDs and obesity are multifactorial and complex, it is imperative to consider all factors which can have an impact, such as genetic predisposition, nutrition, lifestyle behavior, and culture, in addition to many socioeconomic factors. Given the complexity and multifactorial causes of NCDs, it is imperative that all relevant stakeholders have to be involved, each playing its role and taking its responsibilities in a concerted way. Our members are playing a proactive role in helping consumers lead a healthier lifestyle for several years through a range of targeted initiatives on a voluntary basis. Our members are open for the dialogue and are willing to collaborate further on this issue with policymakers, industry groups, and stakeholders in a constructive way. However, to combat obesity and NCDs, a holistic approach based on convincing evidence is required, including promotion of physical activity and nutrition education, instead of focusing on single parameters. The scientific evidence currently shows that excessive consumption of calories combined with insufficient levels of physical activity is likely to result in weight gain, irrespective of the nutritional source. All nutrients or food are a part of a varied and balanced diet when consumed in moderation. Thank you for taking these aspects into consideration.
I thank you. I'm going to just break the speaker's list for a minute and just take the chair's prerogative or take the liberty of just inviting Ms. Katie Dane to respond to one of the points made by the representative of HelpPage International. I mean, this is, after all, an informal interactive hearing. So it was an interesting, I'm thinking of the adjective to use to describe it, but I mean, I hear what she's saying, that an entire cohort of people, those at the younger age of the spectrum and those at the older age of the spectrum, are being left out in terms of the focus we're placing at the people in the middle. So, Katie, please, if you could respond, if you could, to that comment.
Sure. Thank you very much for the comment from HelpAge International, and also the ones obviously from NCD Child and the Young Health Programme, in terms of both of the ends of the the life course, essentially. I have a couple of points to make on that point. I think the most important one is that we in the NCD Alliance very much believe that NCD prevention and control has to be done throughout the life course, and that you cannot neglect or disregard one specific age group over another. It's really got to be a life course approach, and I think obviously there's a lot of challenges which has been referenced in the UN Secretary General's progress report in terms of actually implementing the life course approach, but it's something that we as civil society need to be ensuring that governments are doing and trying to support and guide that with the evidence and the policies and the practice that we need. I think the other point is that within the conversations around post-2015, we as the NCD Alliance have maintained that the overarching health goal within post-2015 should be something along the lines of maximising health across all stages of life, which really reinforces the point that we are promoting NCD prevention and control and health across the life course. When it comes to the specific target on NCD mortality, we have had pushback in terms of the actual availability of data around talking of preventable versus premature. So when we're talking about premature mortality, we're only doing it in terms of technical terminology. And beyond that, we very much support across all stages of life, going beyond the 30 to 70 age bracket within the Global Monitoring Framework target and within the potential post-2015 target as well.
Thank you. I'm going to continue with the list, but there's another point that I hope we can spend some time on addressing, and it's our friend on the left here in the striped tie with the glasses and the dark suit that I'd mentioned before, who had mentioned a series of disconnects, one of which is the gap between what is in policy and what is actually in practice. And we hear a lot about the need to incorporate NCDs into national development plans and policies. But it just strikes me, listening to you, you had made this comment earlier, that fine to have it in the policy in terms of clinical policies and public health policies, but then there's a disjuncture in terms of what is actually happening in practice. And I'd love somebody to address that at some point. But let me continue with the list. I have on my list the representative of the International Federation of Medical Students Association, seat number 1418. You have the floor.
Thank you. My name is Michael Ayers, and I am here with the International Federation of Medical Students Associations. We represent over 1.2 million medical students in 110 countries around the world. As young people and future health professionals, we too want to play our part in building a new social movement around NCDs. We echo what has already been said about the importance of the involvement of youth and adolescents, and that this is essential to tackle NCDs. There are a couple of specific points that I want to touch on. Firstly, given that the SDG Open Working Group is meeting next door, I wanted to talk about the post-2015 agenda. NCDs are there, but one specific concern that I'm worried about is the sort of goal-by-goal approach to the means of implementation and some of the country's positions around this, particularly around the sort of involvement of the Framework Convention in tobacco control as a means of implementation for health. I personally think that this needs to stay there, because if we don't tackle tobacco, then we're not going to achieve the NCD target. Secondly, the review needs to look at the impact of trade on NCDs, and I think, sort of as current trade agreements are showing, they can have the potential to undermine progress on tackling NCDs by denying countries the policy space they need to regulate unhealthy products. Finally, as sort of future physicians, treatment plays a key role in our day-to-day work. And we want to be able to provide our patients with affordable treatment. Yet too often, medicines for NCDs are prohibitively expensive. So we'd like to see continued support for countries to be able to utilize their TRIPS flexibilities for drugs for NCDs. And this is already in the political declaration. Thank you.
Thank you. I think that's the second time this morning that we've heard this issue of trade and NCDs come up. It's an important one, and we note the importance of that nexus. The next person on my list is the representative of the American College of Sports Medicine, seat number 1483. You have the floor.
Thank you, Your Excellency, and distinguished members of the panel for giving me an opportunity to contribute to this discussion. In fact, Your Excellency, perhaps some of my remarks may frame some of the remarks regarding policy and practice that you have talked about. I am Maria Steffen. I am Senior Advisor for Global Partnerships for the American College of Sports Medicine. The American College of Sports Medicine represents 50,000 physicians, academic researchers, exercise physiologists, and allied health and fitness professionals from more than 90 countries around the world. I'd like to take the opportunity to congratulate all of my colleagues for the most informative remarks that they have made this morning, and at the same time be able to call attention to the importance of physical activity as a unique risk mitigator and performance enhancer in improving global health. In that vein, I'd like to share that in a 2007 World Health Organization survey of 118 countries, only 23% indicated the existence of national legislation on physical activity. Only 32% have dedicated budgets, considerably less than the percentage of countries with dedicated budgets for other chronic disease risk factors, including nutrition and tobacco control. While we continue to apply mostly medical models to battling NCDs, physical activity perhaps can be said to be the greatest wonder drug that currently exists. Access to and availability of physical activity opportunities reduces heart disease, diabetes, depression, certain cancers by up to nearly 40%. On the intervention side, doctors screening and assessing patients' physical activity levels would go a long way as a population health management tool. We echo NCD Child's emphasis on children and adolescents, as for the first time in history, children are projected to have a shorter lifespan than their parents. Physically active children who participate in regular physical activity by up to 1 hour a day are up to one-tenth as likely to be obese, are associated with 40% higher test scores, less likely to engage in risky behaviors, and will have reduced chronic diseases across the life course. Physical activity is a unique human capital accelerator that maximizes human potential and human performance. In 2008, estimates of the cost of illness associated with physical inactivity in mainland China, India, the UK, and the US were more than $200 billion. All of this is supported by scientific research and an evidence base. By 2030, the direct cost alone in mainland China and India because of physical inactivity are projected to each increase by more than 450%. The human costs are unforgivable. The economic consequences are unsustainable. In closing, we urge the member states to consider interventions in physical activity across the health, education, development, social welfare, and built environment. This is what we look at when we talk about health in all policies. Economies, cities, and cultures that design for an active environment with active transport and social integration at the core is an investment in global well-being and quality of life that can't be matched. Thank you so much.
You know, I thank you for those well-made, cogent, and very important points. I tell you, just in my own country, at some point in our recent history, our government had decided to discontinue physical education at secondary school level. And I think now they have seen the error of their ways, and it is going to be reintroduced, I believe, as of next year, as mandatory
in the curriculum of all children going to secondary school. I, together with the ambassador of Italy, who was here for most of the morning, sit on a group here at the UN called the Friends of Sport. And so we are very, very aware of the importance of sport and physical activity as far as this subject is concerned. And, you know, I'd urge all of you to follow what we're doing here at the United Nations as we elaborate the post-2015 development agenda, a component part of which is the Sustainable Development Goals, and to make sure that within the what I'm hoping will be a goal on global public health, that NCDs is featured in a good way, in a prominent way, within the goal on global public health. This is something that I'm asking all of you to be advocates for. Go to your member states and urge them to make NCDs properly reflected in what we're doing for the next 15 years, from 2015 to 2030. I now call on the representative of the American Heart Association. You have the floor. Just continue waving and wait till it turns red. On my left in the back row. Okay, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity to speak. I'm speaking here today as the representative of the American Heart Association, but also as a member of the World Heart Federation of the NCD Alliance that you've heard of today. I just want to remind us that the association joins the cardiovascular global community to help implement the World Health Organization's Global Action Plan and other priorities of this political declaration. As an organization who's been committed to really driving down mortality rates here in our own nation, we really see a tremendous amount of opportunities to share our technical expertise, our evidence, and the best practice guidelines to help support the WHO gap, and most importantly, ensure that these efforts are closely connected to the patients and to the public. And I think that there are probably numerous of us here in this room who've either suffered an NCD, had families and friends, and I would encourage you to speak, because I think that would be certainly enlightening. We have some ideas of our own, clearly in working globally with partners, other cardiovascular disease societies and heart foundations. We've come together, but we know that we need to do a tremendous amount more. There are a couple of points that I'd like to just emphasize. We know that successful prevention and treatment of cardiovascular disease requires strong primary, secondary, and tertiary care. But recognizing that effective prevention and early diagnosis will significantly reduce the burden of disease, we cannot neglect the need to ensure access to acute care is available for those who need it and without financial risk. And so we also would pose some questions to member states here in the room to have this dialogue on how we can ensure that CVD care and other NCD care is part and at the heart of universal health care. And health coverage and other mechanisms to deliver health care. We've mentioned before, and we have already, the whole of government approach, and I think that there are promising models that we hope that are showcased in the future years and as national governments begin to look at what can be done to tackle NCDs nationally. But the truth is that we have wellness programs. We have opportunities to work with systems like schools to address where people are at and create these heart-healthy choices and policies. So we welcome being a partner in that effort with member states who are here and others. And we thank you again for considering our statement and working with you for a successful UN review in July.
I thank you for your statement. Next, I have the representative of Alzheimer's Disease International. You have the floor.
Nope, there we go. Good afternoon. My name is Mike Splain. I am speaking on behalf of Alzheimer's Disease International, the federation of over 80 national Alzheimer's associations around the world. I rise to not put any cold water on the party, but I rise to make a point of unfinished business from the 2011 political declaration. In 2011, the member states explicitly recognized that mental and neurological disorders, including Alzheimer's disease, are an important cause of morbidity and contribute to the global non-communicable disease burden. To date, and I think for some very good reasons, to date, Alzheimer's disease and other dementias are largely unaccounted for in both national action plans on non-communicable diseases, as well as the fine and fantastic and rapid deployment of global resources against the problem of NCDs. It's unfinished business. One challenge, one reason I think that's so, is because age is, and aging is, a non-modifiable risk factor that we all want. And so, and in an environment where we're dealing with modifiable risk factors, it's very hard. But the world is aging. And let me point out that when you're talking about irreversible dementias, of which Alzheimer's is 70%, the world is aging, even Africa. Recently, we had a side event at the World Health Assembly where the health minister from Mauritius spoke about how they're developing a national Alzheimer plan. And when asked by fellow African nations why he would do that, and by others who were curious, he said, "I want to get ahead of this thing, unlike other countries that are sweeping up. If I'm planning for something in maybe 5 to 10 years in our future, that's a good thing." I want to just reinforce the point that our colleagues from HelpAge and NCD Alliance both made, that we have to take great care that our data sets in developing strategies around NCDs do not reinforce ageism. Ageism. It's up there with sexism and all the other isms we hate. Let me make three last points. Alzheimer's science is now just hitting its stride. Alzheimer named this curious disease in 1906 with his first scientific paper, we've only seen the last 30 years of major development in the field. And as such, we're now seeing the ripening of Alzheimer's science, particularly a number of adding dementia questions or doing dementia-specific research on a longitudinal basis. And from these, we're learning a couple of key things about why I think this unfinished business needs attention. And one is that problems with thinking and remembering and organizing tasks and being oriented to time and place are really, really important when people have other chronic diseases. Part of the, in the United States and in the developed world, it's been very well demonstrated that people with Alzheimer's and other chronic diseases are some of the most costly people in healthcare systems. Important point that's being demonstrated through research. Thank you to our Italian friend for talking about the value of research. But the other part of research that I want to call our attention to is that we have a dynamic science environment in which the modifiable risk factors for dementia that are at the same heart of the other modifiable risk factors that we're talking about. Our friend from the Stroke Federation highlighted this, but it turns out that physical activity, tobacco use, life course nutrition, all of these are risk factors in addition to non-modifiable risk factors for Alzheimer's or for dementia. And let me also add that being diabetic is horrible for your brain. The point I would like to make is we stand ready and want to work we have dynamic science and a static plan for the next 7 years, and this disconnect is how do we integrate into already established NCD targets, how do we integrate the new knowledge and the developing knowledge about dementia into that work? We suggest that we could work toward more surveillance, and we would encourage anyone to think very strongly about the value add of adding brain health messaging to anti-tobacco campaigns, to obesity campaigns, physical activity, because it's not going to harm anyone to be thinking about their brain as a motivation for adopting a healthy lifestyle. We offer our know-how, we offer our networks, we bring this to the table, and one example of that is recently we are a member of the NCD Alliance at the Big Kids Table. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, let me just say to you, on a serious note. I don't know. Do you have trademark on that saying? Age is a modifiable risk factor that we all want. I mean, if I were to use it, do I have to pay you some royalty for that?
To pay it to Alzheimer's Disease International, because of the major federations, we are the smallest, but we deliver a good punch. No, I think I think please use it. I'll give you another one for free. What's good for your heart's good for your brain.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. I have more people that have requested the floor than I have time to take, because I do want to give our panelists a last opportunity to reflect on what they have heard. So I'm going to take three more speakers, and I'm going to ask that they not only observe the flashing light, I'm going to ask that instead of 3 minutes, they stick to 2 minutes at this stage, just so that we can have some final words. I recognize the representative from Research Triangle Institute, seat number 1394. You have the floor.
Thank you so much. I would like to highlight the need for our discussions in the outcome document to adopt a gender equality perspective. Women are especially vulnerable to NCDs due to gender-based economic and social disadvantages, which result in limited access to information and critical health resources. This is especially the case in my country, India, where girls and women's access to education, employment, and the right to live a violence-free life is far from reality. Katie Dane and others have mentioned the importance of a human rights framework for global NCD prevention efforts, as well as the need to address the disconnect between global progress on NCDs and national-level actions. Investments in women's health platforms inspired by the MDGs can provide an immediate entry point for implementing NCD prevention and control programs, as well as opportunities to advance gender equality, and I urge this floor to take that on. Thank you.
Thank you, and thanks for keeping it succinct. The next person is the representative of Worldwide Palliative Care Alliance, seat number 1388. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and greetings to all. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today. In fact, I'm going to try to keep it to a minute and a half. My name is John Masterjohn. I'm with the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization in the United States, and I'm also today representing the Worldwide Palliative Care Alliance. We are an alliance of national palliative care and hospice member organizations across the globe. On behalf of WPCA, I extend our congratulations to WHO and member states on progress to date, specifically the inclusion of palliative care within the Global Action Plan and the Monitoring and Evaluation Framework, and on passing of the World Health Assembly Resolution on Palliative Care, which included reference to NCDs. I would also like to congratulate WHO on the publication of the Global Atlas of Palliative Care at the End of Life in January of this year, which showed that of the millions of people who needed palliative care at the end of life in 2011, 90% died from non-communicable diseases, yet only a small fraction of these individuals received the palliative care and pain treatment that they needed. It is our concern on the lack of progress to date in relation to palliative care policy development, education, access to opioids and service delivery, particularly in developing countries for people living and dying with non-communicable diseases. It is also our concern that the outcomes document for the high-level meeting is heavily focused on prevention with little attention to treatment and palliation. Though we understand and support a focus on prevention, we also and strongly urge the inclusion of palliative care. I would like to thank Sally Cowell for her excellent comments regarding palliative care in the opening session, and to thank my colleague, Dr. Cleary, regarding his comments earlier this morning regarding access to opioids. We recommend and ask that you all join WPCA and our member organizations in a call for renewed commitment and call for action within the high-level meeting outcomes document to address this critical human rights issue and ensure that all people with NCDs are not subjected to often avoidable suffering and that actions are taken to ensure access to palliative care, including opioid medications, for the millions that need it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. The final intervener from the floor will be the representative of the American Society for Nutrition, seat number 1345. You have the floor.
Yes, my name is Dennis Beer, and I'm here representing the American Society for Nutrition, and I'm also the editor of the Society's journal, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Now, despite the name American in both of those titles, the Society includes members of more than 70 or 80 countries in the United Nations, and the journal receives submissions from more than half of the countries in the United Nations, and for that reason, we are truly an international, not an American journal, despite our name. I really had two comments. The first deals with one that's just reiterating what several people have addressed earlier is, because the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition publishes research data, we are interested in the level of evidence presented in the data. And it seems to me that this document that comes out in July should have at least some discussion of the framework of what levels of evidence we're talking about, how are they defined, how do we define standards of data collection so that we can use the data in meta-analyses and systematic reviews from all of the different countries in the UN, so we begin to understand what issues and what problems are country-specific and which ones are not country-specific. We have to have ways of comparing apples to apples in order to be able to evaluate that. And finally, I'd like to just mention that the need for predetermined outcomes. Many of you know that once the data are collected, there's a tool called, by various people, investigator degrees of freedom, in which the data can be analyzed in all sorts of ways, almost to produce what one wants to produce, if one doesn't have predetermined endpoints at the beginning and how you're going to determine whether you do or do not meet those endpoints. And in that context, I would just like to ask for a point of clarification. I know what I'm going to say now sounds a little bit flippant, but Ms. Dane said something along the way that one of the goals is to reduce deaths from NCDs by 40%. And I'd like to really understand what that means, because the all-cause mortality is always 100%. So if you increase NCDs by 40%, what do you die of? So I think, again, it's this nature of how you're defining precisely what you mean by those things that we need to have in the document at the beginning. Thank you.
Thank you. No, that would have been the last speaker from the floor. I'm going to give the panelists an opportunity to respond, and I'm going to take it in the order of Professor Younger first, followed by Professor Calabresi. And in Ms. Dane's final wrapping up comments, maybe she could address that question that you've just posed as well. We have just shy of 10 minutes left, so I'm asking the panelists to be brief in their comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Excellency. Actually, I'll be very brief. We have constantly mentioned throughout this session on the gap between the global policies and national actions. And the high-income countries may take the existence of strong civil society organizations for granted. But in low- and middle-income countries, majority of these organizations are still weak. And it is a weak civil society that enables, or rather, allows governments inaction, and NCD is a very big example. So there are state actors and non-state actors in all these policies, and if both of them are asleep, then the gap between the policies and action will really be a problem. Of course, there are other challenges of implementation at global and also at national level. So one of the examples that we provided today, I think, can assist and I think can be replicated, and that is of twinning of civil societies which have worked and have shown good example in high-income countries with the low-income countries, and promoting the so-called North-South and South-South collaborations, and then within regions, if we can have civil societies also partnering together with the lessons learned being shared and replicated, I think this will help. And we also mentioned the fact that some funding or support mechanisms for civil societies will also be useful in strengthening the action on NCDs at national level. Thank you.
Professor Calabresi, you have the floor.
I agree with the colleagues, because there's a lot of problem in this kind of problem in the solution, because the data that are very different in different countries, is different in different kind of nutrition about this. Is this the child, is the adult, is the sportive, is the other kind of eating. I think that we have a big problem in the world. We have to harmonize this data, because in the future there is a lot of people that is in this moment eating in kind of different or other half of the world, and then there is a low mixture, and we have to speak about the data that is similar in epidemiology for to have the solution for to all in difference of life.
Thank you. You know, I'm pleased that this issue of data collection is coming out. We also heard from our final speaker, American Society for Nutrition, talking about how do we define standards of data collection. And my friend over here on the left in the striped tie had also spoke about the need for research-based evidence on diet and lifestyle. So I hope this is something that features prominently in the zero draft, which we heard Dr. Harold and some of the others discuss. You know, we're still in an informal consultation stage with respect to this zero draft. So it's morphing into different things as we go along and take views from different member states. And we haven't as yet received views from the G77, which is a big interest group here in the UN. But we certainly are serious about reflecting many of the views, if not all, that we have heard here today. Let me now give it over to Katie for concluding remarks from the panel.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to close with three very brief comments which reflect and hopefully pull up a few of the points that have been discussed this morning. Firstly, the need for harnessing what's going on in the post-2015 development agenda around a data revolution. There's a lot of focus at the moment in post-2015 around this data revolution, and I think the NCD community can really tap into that in terms of really trying to strengthen surveillance and monitoring on NCDs, particularly at the country level where it's so needed. Secondly, the need to really focus on a human rights-based approach to the NCD response, which has been mentioned a few times already. And the fact that what we're talking about when we're meaning human rights is essentially that no one should be left behind in the NCD response. Again, drawing from the post-2015 discourse around leave no one behind, whether you're talking about young ages or whether you're talking about older people, everyone should be addressed and responded to, whether it be NCD prevention or control. My final comment is around the importance of civil society in the NCD response. I think this roundtable today has really emphasised the really rich and diverse contribution that civil society makes to NCDs. And to draw upon Sir George Elaine's reflections on the role of civil society being three main roles. Firstly, advocacy. Secondly, service delivery. And thirdly, the watchdog role and accountability. And what's required in terms of enabling those three roles are capacity building and strategic alliances. I hope that the NCD Alliance is one such strategic alliance that really facilitates those three roles. And I think that capacity building has come out a lot today in the discussions and the particular need for civil society capacity building in low and middle income countries. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Now, I have to just close by apologizing to those of you who had sought the floor, but we just didn't have enough time to take your views. As you know, there's going to be an afternoon session chaired by my colleague, Ambassador Benedict Frankenay of Belgium, who has been sitting in on this throughout. She's on my right. So perhaps there'll be an opportunity for you to air your views at that session. It's not for me to conclude on what we've heard here today. Sir George Alain, who I recognized earlier, will be doing that job for both roundtables. I do want to say, however, that with respect to what we're going to be doing at the high-level review meeting on the 10th and 11th, just in terms of structurally, you'll have seen it in the modalities resolution, but just to remind you, it's regular GA. It's a session of the GA, so we're going to have regular GA times, 10 to 1, 3 to 6, just like we're having today. 10 to 1 is the opening ceremony. We're going to have the benefit of statements from the PGA, who you heard today, the Secretary General of the UN, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, the Director General of the WHO, Dr. Margaret Chan,
Helen Clark, the administrator of the UNDP, and also importantly a person that the PGA will select to give a statement on behalf of civil society. And then we will have plenary statements from 11 through to the 1 o'clock break and resuming at 3 o'clock to six. So the first day is entirely devoted mostly to the opening ceremony and plenary statements. These are national statements. It will be an opportunity for member states to say what progress they have made in terms of implementing the commitments to which they entered in the political declaration. And on the second day, we're going to have two consecutive roundtables chaired at the ministerial level. And those roundtables will begin at 10, go from 10 to 1, and the second one will go from 3 to 5. And the last hour of the day will be the closing ceremony and an opportunity for us to adopt the outcome document to which we have heard. So with that said, I want to congratulate our panelists. I thought they were all excellent in terms of the level of their presentation, and also to thank you, the participants, for making this a lively and interesting session. This roundtable is now closed. Thank you.